We are broadcasting from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. I'm Pim Fox. My co-host and colleague Lisa Abramowitz is off today. Well, wine has been the topic of a presidential tweet. It is also a topic of discussion among those who look for alternative investments. Tom Gearing is managing director and co-founder of Cult Wines, based in London, but he joins us here in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. Tom, thank you very much for being here. What is Cult Wines? What is your business?
So Cult Wines is a wine investment company specifically. So we're different to a traditional merchant or a wine broker or a wine auction house. We are set up completely to deal with private clients all over the world and to build up fine wine collections for the sole purpose of capital appreciation. So buying physical cases of wine, bottles of wine, storing those wines, insuring them, managing them on behalf of the clients, providing daily valuations for our online platform, and then reselling the wines and advising them throughout that life cycle for investment purposes. So this is not to be drunk in the future. This is to be purchased and resold at a profit for our clients to benefit their overall investment portfolio.
Now, I understand that you got involved in this in a big way before you could legally consume any wine. At the age of 13, you spotted a 12-bottle case of Domaine de la Romanée-Conti, right? This is a very worthwhile and prestigious wine.
Yeah.
What did you discover about it?
So I was very fortunate when I was growing up. My father was actually in investment banking, but he was a massive wine collector, very passionate about wine. So I grew up around wine. I think the first time I even tasted wine was about 11 when I was taken to Burgundy with my father. So he bought a lot of wine at auction. This is actually a really salient point in terms of what we do as a business. And he bought a case of Domaine Romanée-Conti, 1959, original wooden casing. Now, if anyone knows a lot about wine, these particular bottles, they're produced in very small quantities, but they come with almost like a serial number. So they have numbers on the front, which obviously detail which bottle number it is. So if you're buying an original case of six bottles, if it had never been tampered with, never been opened, it was the original six bottles, they should be the same consecutive numbers. So whatever that number they are in the series, they should be consecutive. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. When we got the case home, I opened it up, we were inspecting the bottles, taking photos, condition checking the wines, and we found out that the bottom layer of the case, the bottom six bottles, when we looked at it, the numbers were not consecutive, so they were inconsequential. So what that means is at some point in time, someone had opened that case and replaced them. So immediately you think to yourself, are these wines counterfeit? Is there potentially some fraudulent activity going on? Because there's no way that these wines shouldn't be in that order. And the reason I say that's a salient point for what we do now as a company is that we now manage over $120 million of wine on behalf of our clients, and actually making sure that our clients are protected from any potential for fraudulent activity, counterfeit bottling, is essential. Because if you're buying wine for the purpose of reselling to make a profit, you need to make sure that you're selling wines that are authentic. And this has been a big problem in the wine industry over the last 10 to 15 years. So that was obviously a very early experience in my career. I wouldn't even say it was a career at that time. I was just 13 years of age, but it really has stayed with me, and it's something that we hold very dear to ourselves now, being a professional wine investment company advising private clients all over the world.
All right, now I'm going to put you on the Twitter spot, because earlier today, President Donald Trump said, quote, "France makes excellent wine, but so does the United States. The problem is that France makes it very hard for the U.S. to sell its wines into France and charges big tariffs, whereas the U.S. makes it easy for French wines and charges very small tariffs. Not fair, must change." Is that accurate?
Well, let's start with the accuracies, because often there's not a lot of them with Donald Trump. So the accuracies are that French wine and US wines are excellent. So he's correct with that point. What he's inaccurate about is the fact that in France, the domestic French market in France for consumption of wine is almost entirely French. I mean, if you're an Italian wine producer, or Australian, New Zealand, they sell very little wine in the domestic market. In fact, I travel extensively in France. When I'm in Bordeaux, trying to get someone in Bordeaux to drink a Burgundy is impossible. You know, if you go to Bordeaux, all the wine shops have 100% Bordeaux. So in France, it's difficult to get people to drink outside their own region, let alone their own country. So the tariffs that he's talking about is absolute nonsense, in my opinion. I mean, if Californian wine had zero import taxes to export into France, it would make zero difference to whether someone in France would buy and consume Californian wines. And also, the other thing to imagine is, you know, you go to a lot of these rural agricultural areas of France, and outside the more prestigious Bordeaux, Burgundy, but places, in the Languedoc, like Provence, whatever it might be, people can go to their local cooperative, and they can get a gallon of wine for like €2. So those type of individuals are never going to suddenly start buying American wine just because there's no tariffs on it. So it's really an economies of scale. So for me, I would look at this tweet and say it's political posturing. You know, this is nothing more than obviously something that's come up between Trump and Macron, and he's using it as a way to, you know, negotiate or bargain with the French president. But I think in actual real economy of wine, it would make zero difference, in my opinion.
It also seems as though there are a lot of idiosyncrasies when it comes to the wine and alcohol trade, because of course in the United States you have state boundaries yep. that limit what can and cannot be sold and transported across state lines.
Yeah.
When you gave the idea that, all right, in France, the domestic market is so domestic that it would be like an American saying, I will not drink a wine that comes from the state of Oregon. I will only drink wine that comes from Napa.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the kind of connection it is.
Yeah, it really is like that.
Are there a preponderance of French wines when it comes to this cult wine business, or is it starting to expand to include American labels, for example?
Very, very good question. If you're looking at the investment market for fine wine, you know, you're talking about probably 1% of all wine produced would be categorized as, say, investment grade. And that market's worth about $5 billion a year. Now, if you look at, say, our assets under management, our $120 million, around 60% of it is in Bordeaux. About 15-20% is in Burgundy. So really France, and then obviously you've got places like Champagne, et cetera, et cetera. So France is probably around 75-80% of our total AUM. Outside of that, we have US is our next biggest regional breakdown within our portfolio. Italian wines, and then New World regions like Australia, New Zealand, and even South America. But Californian wines in particular, some of the Napa producers have been excellent for investment purposes. You know, some of the top wines have made fantastic returns for clients over the long...
I keep thinking of Screaming Eagle, for example.
Absolutely. I mean, Screaming Eagle is a very tough wine to source and acquire, and obviously it's produced in very, very small quantities. But you're right, you know, if you were on that waiting list and you get those wines allocated to you, you're almost guaranteed to make a profit if you resell those wines, because you're getting them at such a great price, there's such little quantity available that when you resell, you were almost guaranteed to make a good return. But if you're looking outside of that, you've got some up-and-coming producers, obviously some more well-known ones like Opus One, Dominus, that have done very well. So I think the Californian wine market from an investment perspective is very strong and growing.
Should I give you 20 seconds. Should I be concerned that I like screw top bottles?
Not at all. I mean, I think in the next 20 years, we might see a change in the industry, but there's just not enough scientific and enough back vintages of wines that have been produced in screw cap to really show whether they are have any real differences to cork closures.
Well done. Thanks very much for being with us. Tom Gearing, he is Managing Director, co-founder of Cult Wines. Cheers to you, and many thanks for being here.